What is art without the muse? Many of Western art's most famous works are depictions of women. But who were these women? Do they have their own stories to share with the world? Hi, listeners. Grace Anna here, host of Art Muse, a podcast that shares the life stories of the women pictured in famous works of art. In doing so, Art Muse aims to reshape the ways in which we interpret these well-known works by paying dues to the women whose images have been immortalized, but whose names and stories have been wrongfully overlooked. Each episode focuses our attention on a specific female muse, sharing their important life and legacy. By sharing these women's stories, we are given the opportunity to appreciate artworks from a new perspective, through the eyes of the women whose image stares back at us. Season 3 continues to share the life stories of the women pictured in famous works of art, this time focusing on artist models who were also performers in their own right. Season 3 will begin its release this fall. We cannot wait to share these amazing women's stories with you. In the meantime, we hope you continue to enjoy Season 1 and 2 of Art Muse, available on all streaming platforms. Until next time, bye for now.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Stars of the Golden Age, a show that highlights the lives of legends from film, music, and the birth of television during Hollywood's Golden Age, with a special emphasis on their lives behind the scenes. I am your host, Erin Carlson. Welcome to part 2 of Theda Bara's story. If you haven't listened to part 1, please go back and do so before listening to this episode. Last time, we left off in 1917, when Theda Bara was preparing to film what would be her most famous role, Cleopatra. Cleopatra was finally what pushed Theda westward from New York, like the flocks of other filmmakers and actors of this time. New York and Fort Lee, New Jersey, up until the mid-teens, had been the film capital of the U.S. But word had gotten out about the vast spaces and cooperative climate in California, so things were shifting fast. I did an episode about the history of the Hollywood sign where I cover more about this transition, so please go back and give that a listen if you haven't already. Well, Theda Bara did not want to move to L.A. She loved New York. She loved the museums, the libraries, the architecture, just the whole vibe. But a film like Cleopatra needed the space and landscape available in California that wasn't available in New Jersey. So California she went, bringing her mother with her. The set for Cleopatra was elaborate and expensive. It was quite intriguing to many fans and reporters to learn of the giant replicas of the pyramids and the Sphinx built by Fox for the movie, especially given the fabricated history of Theda living under the Sphinx as a child. In part one, I mentioned a risque costuming that Theda would have down the road. Well, it was for this movie. One costume in particular that caught my attention as I was scrolling through photos of the film and its production was of Theda in a coiled snake bra. Bra might be a stretch. The coverage was scant. It was so scant, I didn't want to use it in the cover photo for this episode because it was that revealing. But I will share it on Facebook and Instagram. Overall, there was quite a bit of skin shown in Cleopatra, Anthea de Barrow was not the most enthusiastic about it. But she had softened a little bit on the costuming since that first film and that one-piece swimsuit that she was forced to wear. Unfortunately, only a minute or so of Theda Barrow's Cleopatra survives today, as the nitrate film was destroyed in a fire at Fox Studios in the 1930s. I watched the surviving footage, though, and I can see why it was the great success that it was. Cleopatra was a massive hit. Theda Barrow's performance was celebrated, breaking box office records all over. Theda Barrow's physical appearance was brought into focus pretty often throughout her film career. Talk of her body image skyrocketed after her provocative costuming in Cleopatra. A lot of her body was shown, and people had a lot to say about it. She was described in the press as plump and well-fed. It was not nice. She was not overweight, and even if she was, who cares? Well, 1917 cared. Theda was beautiful and healthy, but she was different from many of the cookie-cutter actresses out there at the time. But different is good, or so we know now. Just one more thing she had to endure at the hands of fame. Shortly after finishing Cleopatra, Theodosia Goodman legally changed her name to Theda Barrow. But the most interesting thing about this was that her entire family changed their last names. Her mother, her father, her brother, and her sister. They all ditched their Goodman name and became Barrows. Theda was really famous, so it's no wonder they all wanted to latch on to that name. Especially since her sister was also trying to be an actress, and her brother trying to rise the ranks in the theater world. Theda was so famous that songs were written about her, poems were penned about her, and, kind of on the other side of things, parodies were made about her in vaudeville shows. Even Fanny Brice did a Theda Barrow parody in the 1916 Ziegfeld Follies. John DeCoven wrote in the Cleveland Leader, quote, "Theda is thrown, eyes and all, to the lions to make a Ziegfeld holiday. It is a symphony of so many snaky maneuvers, so staggering an assortment of amorous wiggles, so luscious a collection of lip-twisting and eye-rolling. In fine, so gorgeous and grim a grotesquerie that it is almost libel, and the original Theda might be ill over it. Her impersonation as it stands in these first days of the new Follies is veritably an irresistible rib tickler, but by the same token, it is unmitigatingly cruel," end quote. It's a good thing Theda had learned fairly early on to ignore this kind of thing. If she didn't, it would have been disastrous on her emotional well-being. By mid-1918, less than 4 years after she became an overnight sensation, Theda Barrow's popularity and fame seemed to be ending just as quickly as it began. There were new, younger players on the scene, and the vamp trope wasn't so hot anymore. Although Theda had been pleading for all 4 of those years for other kinds of roles, Fox just substituted her vamp roles for second-rate scripts and gave all the good parts to their new actresses. Theda could accept this. Her heart honestly wasn't even in it anymore. But if it was all over, she yearned for just one last good movie. And she felt like she had found that vehicle in Kathleen Mavourneen in early 1919. We'll talk more about this movie in a minute. But first, let's talk about Theda's love life, which we haven't touched on yet. And that's because she didn't have one. It's not for lack of options, she just wasn't interested. She received thousands of fan letters every single week, and many of them were from interested men. And with them often came gifts and candy. The candy she always donated to local hospitals. She even received a tiger skin and some human bones from a couple of men, thinking she would find that charming. Fox once reported that they had received 1,329 marriage proposals for Theda. But it's anyone's guess how accurate that is, considering Fox's track record with PR honesty. Theda just wasn't interested in much of a social life. She had her family, she had her home, and she had her books. And she was happy with that. But then comes director Charles Braben onto the set of Kathleen Mavourneen, and man, was he a dreamboat, Theda thought. She liked him, and he liked her. She found a movie she was really excited to be a part of, and along with it, she found a man. Kathleen Mavourneen opened in theaters on August 19, 1919, and it wasn't quite the celebrated affair Theda had anticipated. She plays an Irish woman in the film, and the Friends of Irish Freedom and the Central Council of Irish Associations was really upset at the film's portrayal of Irish poverty, and the fact that a Jewish woman was portraying an Irish girl. This isn't great, but it may not sound too terrible, but it gets really bad. Really, really bad. People were throwing stink bombs down the aisles of theaters during showings of Kathleen. Catholic priests were demanding the banning of the film in their cities. Protesters crowded the fronts of theaters. And then riots broke out. People were smashing projectors and stealing reels of film. At Fox, they received daily calls and letters of death threats, mostly against Theda. This movie initially had really good reviews from prominent film reviewers, but this was all just too much. Kathleen Mavourneen was pulled from most theaters. And from the sounds of it, the storyline was not bad. It was not degrading to Irish culture. I mean, Theda Bara had played a seducing vamp several times. She was shown on screen almost completely topless. And this was the movie that pushed the public over the edge. I guess you don't mess with the Irish. Theda did two more films for Fox, and then their relationship ended. Theda's departure from Fox was really emotional. She felt free and liberated, yet she felt hurt and underappreciated. She had once been their number one star, and now nobody blinked an eye when she walked out of the studio for the last time. Theda and her sister took a much-needed trip to Europe to just decompress from it all. And then she returned to her beloved New York apartment to figure out what comes next. She was 34 years old. One thing she did know was that she did not want to be finished with acting. She visited other film studios, but she was so typecast as the vamp that nobody was flying out of their seats to sign her. Plus, that horrible publicity surrounding Kathleen probably didn't help either. Then she was approached by Broadway producer A.H. Woods. Not a great Broadway producer by any means. He was once described as producer of hokey hits and flops. One of these flopped plays was called Queen of the White Slaves. How about this one? This one's even better. Bertha, the Sewing Machine Girl. Woods had grown a little from these kinds of plays, but he was a far cry from the best. Guess what kind of role he convinced Theda Bara to star in? A drug-addicted, murdering seductress back from the dead. A vamp. The play was The Blue Flame, and the storyline was not awesome, but fans came out of the woodwork to see their vamp live on stage. Theda Bara incited riots again. Only this time because of a positive reaction. We're talking traffic stopping, police-required crowds of people on the streets around the theaters. Crazed fans clutched onto Theda's limo as her driver attempted to drive away after the show. Some of them held on as the car drove off, and they would hold on as long as they could. But once people actually saw the play, they realized how bad it was. Theda received reviews like, Miss Bara is not so bad, or that her performance was satisfactory enough, or she is an actress of average competence. Ouch. However unpleasant the reviews and reception, theaters continued to sell out. From what I could interpret from it, people were attending out of curiosity. All of the hype surrounding how bad the play was intriguing to everyone. It was trending. Everyone wanted to see the fall from grace that this once screen idol had landed in. Even though Theodobara was now being seen as a fool, people were still paying to see her. And that ended up being a very good thing for Theodobara. She earned a ton of money doing this play. With the Blue Flame wrapped up in January of 1921 and no other options on the stage or on the screen, Theda took an offer from Marcus Lowe to join one of his vaudeville troupes. But she couldn't dance, she couldn't sing, and she wasn't a comedian. You know, all of the classic vaudeville talents. So what Theda did was just sit and tell stories. She talked about her short film career, she talked about her vampire image, she talked about whatever the audience wanted her to talk about. It was an intimate conversation between her and her audiences. After a few months on the road, she returned to New York, to her mother, and to Charles Braben. Things had been pretty casual for the first year and a half or so since their first meeting, by the sounds of it. Theda described their relationship as nice lunches and interesting talks. So naturally, the next step is marriage. Theodobara married Charles Braben in the summer of 1921. And with this marriage, Charles informed her, came the official end of her career because the women in the Braben family did not work. Those strict gender rules were very clear in the Braben family. Theda's place was now in the home. Period. But she still made sure she had some freedoms. She still traveled, but Charles didn't like to travel with her much. He was working on film sets a lot. In fact, he was one of the original directors of Ben-Hur, so that took him out of the country for a long while. They had a good balance of together and apart. Maybe not good for everyone, but it worked for them. Charles just absolutely did not want his wife working anymore. But Theda wanted to work. Maybe not all the time, but she wasn't ready to fall out of the public eye quite yet. She secured a film titled The Unchastened Woman in 1925, and she was so excited. She hadn't worked on a movie set in 5 years, the same amount of time her entire film career had lasted. That's how long she'd been gone from it now. And a lot had changed. The industry was changing. Films had become more sophisticated. Advances had been made in the filming process. New stars were on the scene. Stars like Clara Bow, Pola Negri, and Rudolph Valentino. Youth and beauty and flappers everywhere. She could handle it, though. And she gave it her best shot. But the movie was a flop. But she still wasn't ready to give up. She next signed on with Hal Roach to do a series of comedic film shorts. Comedy was never her genre, so it was a whole new world for her. She did a few, working with Hal Roach's super team, Laurel and Hardy, and then she had to bow out. Charles said enough was enough. Any wife of his was simply forbidden from working. Theodobara was officially retired at 41 years old after the film short Madame Mystery in 1926. By all accounts, it sounds like Charles and Theda's marriage was a happy one. Yes, he sounds controlling, but we have to remember it was the 1920s and Charles was a very traditional British man. Theda was happy. She got her last hurrah and her last thrills on a film set, and she was finally able to feel at peace with closing that chapter of her life. And with the closing of that chapter, a new one opened. The woman who had never had a social life, maybe partly because she was too hyper-focused on work, suddenly found joy in a rich social life. She and Charles would dine out frequently, they had a nice group of friends, they were members of the country club, and Theda learned how to golf. She was said to liven up every party she attended. The quiet little bookworm had grown her wings. Theodobara was also helpful and supportive of the newest stars in the industry as the 1930s settled in. Here's what she had to say about some of them. Quote, Garbo wins top honors. Of course, Marlene Dietrich and Katherine Hepburn are distinctive too. The former for an exotic blonde beauty and Miss Hepburn for a crisp something that's hers alone. Katherine Hepburn always makes me think of the winged victory. She goes striding about, armed in youth and strength, utterly invincible. And Mae West, ah, there is a vamp, end quote. Theodobara may not have been on screen anymore, but she was still very much on the scene. She even convinced Charles to let her return to the stage for a very short five-night engagement for a production of the play Belladonna. When Theda entered the stage the first night of the play, there was reportedly a solid five-minute ovation. In 1936, she entered the radio game a little by appearing on Lux Radio Theater. She stayed very busy with social engagements, but she liked to pop back into the spotlight on the stage and radio every now and then. She remained very close to her mother, who was a package deal wherever Theda and Charles were living, whether it be New York, Cincinnati, LA, or Charles's property in Nova Scotia. You may be wondering what happened to Theda's father, Bernard. Well, I didn't find much mention of him throughout Theda's story, but he and Theda's mother, Pauline, were married through it all. It sounds like he was happy in Cincinnati running his tailor shop, and he would periodically visit his wife wherever she may be. Bernard passed away in 1936 at the age of 83. Theda and Charles, and I think her mother, spent a few years in Europe, from after Bernard's passing until 1939. The looming danger of World War II pushed them back to the States. Once back in the U.S., Theda, now in her mid-50s, had that itch to perform once again. She did some more radio work, but she really wanted to do a movie. There were talks, but nothing ever materialized. She was very happy in her life, though. She hopped a lot back and forth between their New York and Beverly Hills homes, staying as active as ever with social engagements. She was a great supporter of the opera and theater in New York. New York was always where her heart remained, no matter where she was. While in LA, she loved to do lunch and dinner engagements. She became an impressive cook during this time of her life, too, and loved to give dinner parties to share her delicacies with her friends. Theodobara did an interview with Hedda Hopper in the early 1950s. Here's a portion of what she said in that interview, looking back at her short but powerful film career. Quote, to understand those days, you must consider that people believed what they saw on the screen. Nobody had destroyed that great illusion. Now they know it's all make-believe, end quote. She went on to talk about how glamour is the most essential element of Hollywood. And she believed every movie star should be made up perfectly at all times. And that means no slacks for women. The most haunting thing she said to Hedda Hopper during this interview, however, was about Marilyn Monroe. Remember, Theodobara was one of the first American film sex symbols. And this is what she had to say about the current of that time biggest sex symbol. Quote, I think, like everyone else, that she is sexy. But I don't believe she likes it much, does she? She probably will have the same trouble I have had. She will never be able to live down her reputation, end quote. As we know, Marilyn never even had the chance. She was left stamped forever in our minds as the iconic sex symbol she was. In the spring of 1954, Theda started feeling a little off. She was unusually tired and she was experiencing some digestive issues. And she was losing weight pretty quickly without trying. As someone who struggled most of her adult life with her body image, thanks mostly to distasteful reporters, this made her pay attention. This wasn't typical for her. When she saw her doctor, it was unfortunately bad news. Theda had colon cancer. She had surgery at the end of June of 1954, but sadly the cancer had already spread to her liver. Her condition declined pretty rapidly from that point. Theda Bara lost her battle with cancer on April 7, 1955. She was 69 years old. She left behind her husband Charles, her sister Lori, and her beloved mother Pauline. Pauline passed away 2 years later, just a few days before her 96th birthday. Theda's husband, Charles, died just a couple months after Pauline. The silent era of filmmaking is highly praised and respected now over a century after its heyday. But when Theda Bara died in 1955, it was just a few decades in the past. It's like us thinking about the pop culture and technology of 1995 today. We cringe or laugh a little at some of the things, don't we? Some of the clothing, the early internet technology, those massive computers we all kept in our houses, if we were lucky enough. The movies and television shows. Things evolve, style evolves, technology evolves, and entertainment evolves. The style, technology, and movies of our past go through a process, it seems. They have to spend a few decades in the land of cringe before they can evolve to being seen as charming and celebrated. Nobody cares much about anything from the 1990s now, but maybe someday people will dive into the culture and respect it for what it gave history. I mean, the 90s did throw out some pretty great music. Well, that's how the silent film era was seen in 1955, when one of its biggest stars died. It was as far in the past as 1995 is for us today. So the world didn't necessarily see Theda Bara for who she was, a pioneer of the movies, a cultural icon. Yes, her death was mourned, and yes, people felt something great was lost. But silent films were still kind of chuckled at in the 1950s. It was campy entertainment compared to the masterpieces being turned out in their modern day. Parodies were made of this old-fashioned, unsophisticated filmmaking that it was seen as. And honestly, there were just a small fraction left to tell the tale. So many silent films had already been lost to time. Either nobody cared to save them, or the film itself didn't survive. During the silent film era, nitrate film was used. And nitrate film was very dangerous. It is highly flammable, and if it is on fire, very hard to extinguish because cellulose nitrate contains oxygen, and fire loves oxygen. It can also self-combust. Because of this, there were many film storage fires where everything was lost. One of the more famous fires was the 1937 Fox Fire that I had mentioned, which destroyed pretty much all of their film collection, including Theda Bara's films. Of course, some copies still existed in theaters or private collections, thank goodness. Fires were also fairly common in the projection booths inside of the theaters, from the heat created by the rolling film. Special fireproof booths were made to ensure the safety of theater guests. Booths made of fireproof asbestos. That poor projectionist. There's actually a lot more I could say about nitrate film, but I've already gotten off track here. The point is, many silent films were lost to fire, and some were simply lost because nobody thought they needed to be saved. It is estimated that about 75 to 85% of American silent films are lost forever, and that number just keeps being bumped up as time goes by. Of the ones that have survived, many have been preserved digitally or on different film stock. But it is said that the viewing experience on nitrate film is like no other, that the sharpness and high contrasting is remarkable. So collectors and film historians are doing everything they can to preserve as many original nitrate reels as possible. So that's just a little sidetrack about that. And now I would like to share some other interesting things I learned during my research. Bullet point number one. At the height of her fame, Theodobara had a sandwich named for her. Now that's when you know you've made it. The Theodobara sandwich contained minced ham, mayo, sliced pimento, and sweet pickles. So like a sandwich spread. Served warm on toasted bread. Bullet point number two. You think a sandwich is cool? Theodobara also had a signature perfume blend designed in her honor. The scent was a combination of woods of Persia and pomegranate blossoms. The perfume was described as subtle and haunting. Bullet point number three. Theodobara was subpoenaed to testify in court in 1918 in a murder trial. A case she had absolutely zero ties to. A man had thrown his wife out of a window, killing her. Theda was called as an expert witness for the defense because they were trying to say the victim was a vampire. And since Theda was the vamp, she was called as an expert witness. Wild, I know. Ultimately, the judge denied her as an expert witness. Bullet point number four. The original house that Theda kept in Los Angeles for her Fox shoots had a famous next owner too, Fatty Arbuckle. Although the neighbors detested having the vamp living in their neighborhood, they would have taken her back in a heartbeat to get rid of Fatty Arbuckle and Buster Keaton's loud, rowdy parties. Arbuckle moved out a couple of years after his murder trials, and then he rented it to director Raoul Walsh. Then Norma Talmadge and Joseph Skink lived there, and then it became a home for Catholic priests. The Rodney King riots of 1992 left most homes in the neighborhood damaged or destroyed. But that home, full of so much rich film history, was left untouched. Bullet point number five. In 1958, Marilyn Monroe posed for a photo shoot where she dressed like five different stars of the past. Lillian Russell, Theodobara, Clara Bow, Jean Harlow, and Marlena Dietrich. These photos of Marilyn as Theda are really fun and, of course, super sexy. And in them, that barely there snake bra was recreated. Bullet point number six. It is Theodobara's face that graces the logo of the Chicago International Film Festival. Those signature black-lined eyes. In conclusion, Theodobara was never seeking a career as a film actress. She would have loved to just stay on the stage. But that's the path that her life took, and she became one of the most popular silent film actresses in the world. At the height of her fame, only Charlie Chaplin and Mary Pickford topped her in fame. But that wild rise to fame was extremely short-lived, mostly because of the typecasting she experienced at Fox. Not only that, but that outrageous image the studio built for her. There was no way to come down from that. She was showcased as such a seductress villain, a bad girl, that the world just couldn't accept her as anything else. This fall from grace didn't crush Theda, though. She was resilient. She just found a new focus for her life. Instead of giving her life and entire image to others, she lived her life for her. She had a solid marriage. She spent as much time as possible with her mother. She traveled. She entertained. And she created a rich social life for herself. She had a good life. Thank you, Theodobara, for being our original vamp. You gave up your own precious identity for it. But wow, look at how it has endured. And thank you all for listening. And now I would like to share a review of the week. This is another comment from Spotify, and it's from a username that has about 25 characters, so I'm not going to read it. But you know who you are. You've left a couple comments that I really, really appreciate. It is in response to my little rant at the end of the James Cagney episode about my dislike of the hatred online. Here's what it says. Quote, "Social media is a swill of toxicity. I am much older than you, regular viewer of TCM, and grew up with these actors. I listen at the end of the day. You offer all kinds of info, even a longtime classic movie fan didn't know. It's pleasant, not divisive or controversial. We love and support it, so please keep it up. It relaxes me and helps me to unwind after a day in the concrete jungle." End quote. Thank you for your comment, this one and the others too. And I have to give all the credit to the great biographers whose books I've used in my research. I promised you I wouldn't just regurgitate Wikipedia content, and I meant it. I'm going to get the good stuff from the good books. I'm really happy these stories bring you enjoyment, and I promise I'm not going anywhere. Please don't forget to follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave those positive ratings and reviews if you're able to where you listen to the show. And if you want to check out the bonus content I have available, there's a whole bunch of it over on Patreon. You can visit patreon.com/starsofthegoldenagepodcast to join the fun. This month over there on the cocktail party episode, I have a fun fall spin on a classic old-fashioned, accompanied with some juicy 1950s celebrity gossip. Our movie of the month on Patreon is Blythe Spirit from 1945, so I'll have a recap episode about that movie, including some fun facts about it. And the best part of each month, a full-length bonus episode. And this month's topic is Haunted Hollywood. You don't want to miss it. And you not only get that stuff plus all the stuff in the future as long as you want to stick around, but you get the entire backlog of bonus content as well. It's really affordable, and the best part is you'll be supporting the production of this little podcast and all the time and resources that go into turning out these stories each week. Please consider helping, and I'll repay you with some really great bonus content. patreon.com/starsofthegoldenagepodcast, or you can find a link in the show notes of this episode where you're listening right now. Thanks so much, guys. Reach for the positive in every day, be kind to everyone you encounter, and have a great rest of your week. For this episode, I used the book Vamp, The Rise and Fall of Theda Bara by Eve Golden.